It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, we are go. Yeah.
I thought you introduced these things the same way every time.
Hello. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast coming to you in, I think it's like five dimensions at this point.
Oh.
But we're just one of them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Where's your little musical interlude you do? I thought, did you stop doing that? Maybe I am remembering wrong.
And then gives
no,
up.
No, no, no. Ah, never mind.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William.
And we have no idea what episode number this is.
Okay, I have a question.
Because we're the B team.
What's all this stuff?
This is evil sound equipment.
And what's up with that?
What do you mean?
Why do we have that?
Background noise.
Oh.
Our old equipment was not making background noise.
What? Why do we even care? I mean, it's there.
It's more evil.
Oh, this is more evil.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know what they're doing.
Okay.
But background noise is evil.
It just seems like a lot of stuff for us just filling in for these jerks on the other side once in a while.
Yeah. That's because I bought it from a company here that's evil.
Oh, okay.
So they gave me a bunch of shit I didn't need, charged me too much, you know, all that stuff. It's hard sometimes to be in a whole evil universe.
Yeah, really, because
you're the victim as often as anything.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Well, yeah, like you said, as often as you're not.
Evil can be a relative scale, yeah. You know?
Okay, well, gosh, then I'm sorry that had to happen to you, but I suppose it'll sound better, but I don't know why we care.
No, also worse.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Sorry.
Anyway, earlier we were looking at a really cool video we're not going to tell you about because that might give away what time it is. I am admitting this is a time where videos are watchable.
Yeah.
So that's a thing.
And anyway, the more we reveal about this side, the more confused they get. So let's just not even talk about it anymore.
So William, how was your dimension?
Everything's cool. Everything's great.
Everything's cool.
I feel sorry for you, though, with having to, the whole evil equipment thing.
Yeah.
But I probably shouldn't because I'm evil, so.
I already pay for the evil web space, so.
Yeah.
But shelling out all sorts of evil bucks.
But other than that, yeah, everything's, it's what it is. How about you? How have things been with you?
My dimension's pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Chilling.
You're over the whole
chilling.
Getting cheated for the equipment thing? You're over it?
Well, yeah, you can't hold a grudge too long in the evil universe. I mean, you can, it's sort of the point, but you can't waste too much time on holding a grudge in the evil universe.
What you do, of course, is if someone's evil to you and that feels like crap, you go
pay it forward.
Yeah, you're evil to somebody else, and then you feel a little better. Yes. So I presume you've taken care of that already, yes. Should I anticipate you're going to be evil to me?
Treat people as you would have already been treated by some assholes.
Yeah.
Is the golden rule.
Yeah, that is the golden rule.
It's worded poorly, but the gist.
We all get it.
Yeah, we know what that means. Okay, so, hat.
Let's get right to it.
Is that my musical interlude? Who's he from? It's a blank card.
It's a red. It's a red card.
Oh, red. Wait, does that mean we're kicked out of the soccer game?
I don't know.
I don't.
Do your vocal...
It's possible the hat only had an orange ballpoint pen at the time.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
And that it was hard to read, and therefore the hat only transcribed two or three in that horrible color and then went to the trouble to go find another pen because it was hard to read.
I guess we've had black and blue, haven't we? Or have we?
We've had variety of colors.
We have?
Yes.
I remember, I mean, black and blue is what I kind of remember, but I don't remember ever having any. Okay, whatever. Dear Vocal Extensions of the Magical Talking Hat.
There we are.
Why are so many people proud of their weaknesses? Mark McKibben asks in a slightly digested question.
Or perhaps not so slightly digested.
I'm not sure what this means.
Well, to pull a hypothetical example out of the air, amongst certain groups of individuals, case in point, my friends, who tend to be nerdier individuals, and perhaps in a related fact or not, most of us have glasses. Sometimes we like to talk about how poor our vision is, and there's a little bit of a one-upsmanship of who has the worst eyesight.
Really, you think that's what Mark means?
I have a sneaking suspicion.
Well, that doesn't strike me as showing pride about it. It strikes me as something competitive between these people, and that just, they're going to be competitive about everything, including things like that. So the fact that it happens to be a weakness is really immaterial. It's just the general competitiveness between those people that's manifesting, and that's all. That's not really the same as them actually being proud of their weakness.
Okay.
I mean, don't you think?
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for sort of a martyr complex or a almost self-righteousness of what you have to suffer through, like your weakness in that I'm really bad at this thing.
Oh, well, that seems like a slightly different thing to me. That's not so much an issue of weakness as it's an issue of victimhood. Like, so you're saying that some people...
Yeah, but people can turn an issue of weakness into something like that. People can turn their difficulty with public speaking into a thing like that. See, well, it's harder for me, you know, because I have a harder time public speaking.
Well, that doesn't seem like a pride
thing. I don't have as hard a time as you. I have a much harder time than
you. Maybe what I need here to grasp this is a better example of someone actually somewhat boasting about a thing that even they regard as a weakness, but they're boasting about it.
Well, see, I feel like instances where this comes up, it's a semi-conscious thing. I think instances where this would come up, the individual in question would say they are not, in fact, proud of whatever it is they're talking about. Mm-hmm. But the manner in which they talk about it seems to sort of indicate that.
Because I think I can say, as I'm pondering the question here, I think I can say that I've heard people seem to almost boast about their particular addiction or their particular vice, if you will.
All right.
I don't know.
That could be an example.
You think that might fall along the same lines?
Well, it's tricky. There's the version of boasting, there's the version of I can't even function unless I've had 6 cups of coffee.
Yeah.
Versus the I can drink a shitload of tequila.
Okay, yeah, the latter is not what I'm talking about.
No, because the latter is not being termed at all as a weakness.
No.
But the former is essentially.
Well, the second one could be implied, like this person's an alcoholic and they're bragging about it, but that's not necessarily the case.
No, no, no. They are not proud of their weakness.
Yeah.
They are proud of what they consider their strength. The rest of us consider it a weakness.
I suppose.
Yes.
If it's considered a weakness by the rest of us, but the first one, yes, that's what I'm getting.
Okay. Okay, in that situation, I think it becomes a character trait. I think it makes you special or interesting. It's an identifying characteristic as opposed to just everybody else who apparently is capable of basic motor function without 6 cups of coffee. Like, yeah, everybody's like that. I'm special. I'm fucked up.
Do you think that's part of it? Like you said, someone feeling like they're special,
that would be my best.
Yes. It seems like a popular thing in our culture for people to think, you know, our faults or our mistakes, these things about us are the only things that we can really call our own. They're the things that make us unique. An idea that I think is, I don't understand it because that seems to be so demonstrably not true. The only thing that is your defining characters. But there does seem to be a sense in our culture that it is the only thing or the main thing or the most interesting thing about you are the things that make you weak.
Well, we have a great example in our midst. I have been known in life in recent years on this podcast to brag about how fat I am.
Have you really? I think you've boasted maybe a little about how lazy you are.
Well, that's also a good example.
That's probably
but no, I mean, and people will say like, oh, I'm so fat. And I'll be like, how much do you weigh? And they're like, 300 pounds. And I'll be like, that's nothing. That's bragging about what essentially is something I'm not, nobody's really envying. And I'm not saying I want to keep.
But you're not proud of that. When you talk about
it does come across that way.
The lazy thing comes across that way a little more.
Well, okay. We can focus on that if you'd like.
Because it's not a matter of what I like. It's just when you talk about being overweight, it doesn't sound like something that, I mean, it sounds like something you're admitting frankly and you're being honest and truthful about it and maybe brutally honest with yourself about it. But when you talk about being lazy, that's the one thing that you talk about that has the slightest tinge of pride in it.
Not the slightest tinge. I tend to be very proud of my life.
No, because sometimes
I would be more proud of it, but it takes too much effort.
But there are occasions where you've regretted a little bit that, you know, that you didn't feel more compelled to, you know, do things to stop injustice or whatever.
Yeah.
And then that feeling passes. But, you know, yes. But
turns out to be gas most of the
time. Of all the times you've talked about your own characteristics and mentioned ones that most people wouldn't find positive, that's the only one I've ever heard you talk about with a slight indication of pride.
And I think, so this works as a good an example for the situation. And I think there's two parts to that. One is it's a bit. You know, it's a bit.
And that's why I say a little bit of pride, because I realize that you're kidding around.
It's my shtick.
Yeah,
and
that's
it's always been my shtick.
That's right.
I mean, the place where I most use that is in the workplace, because then it's hilarious.
Yeah, right,
you know,
sure.
I'm at the place paying me to be productive, bragging about my lack of productivity. And I only do it if I'm fairly certain that they are confident I'm productive.
Yeah, right.
If I start thinking they think I'm lazy, I start shutting up with that.
Yes.
But insofar as there is a grain of truth behind that bit, which often there is in such things, I think it's a defense mechanism a little bit. I think ultimately, deep down, I do feel like I'm quite lazy, and I have very little self-discipline, very little willpower. I actually kind of blame my parents for some of that in some ways. This has come up before. They raised me in ways that were very different than a lot of other kids, and that's the fallout from there. I got a lot of great stuff out of it.
Sure,
there's a lot of emotional issues that a lot of kids have growing up that I don't have.
And, right.
and communication levels with them that a lot of people don't have with their parents. This, to me, is a lot of the fallout from that. But for whatever reason, I've got this, and I'm not pleased with it. I feel bad about it. I lament it greatly. I think in some ways this is my attempt to own it, to repurpose it, as it were, to embrace what I consider an ineffable and unavoidable aspect of myself.
Okay, so that's a good point. What are you going to do with your weakness? Are you going to sit around and deny that you have it? And if it's a weakness that you feel like you're probably going to have your entire life, either because it seems so insurmountable or because you don't have any particular problem with it, what else can you do except basically let people know that, you know what, I know this about myself. You're not the only one who knows, and this is how I cope with it. So.
And it is something of an identity thing for me at this point. I am the really, really lazy guy. I am a heroically, almost cartoonishly lazy, or at least that's what I say. That's my, again, and it sort of comes full circle. That's my bit. That's an identifying characteristic. And it's funny because theoretically, I'm getting in better shape. Theoretically, I'm eating better. I'm exercising. Theoretically, I am going to have less fat on my person. Theoretically, at some point, I may not be really considered fat anymore. That has never been true in my life. At least going back to age 6. That's the earliest I can remember specifically that I was fat. And I've never not been fat. And I have some really conflicted emotions about the idea, because I identify as a fat person. And if that goes away, that is a major part of my identity that has been there for my entire life that is gone. And that's going to be weird. In a lot of ways, it's going to be really good, but it's going to be weird.
You know, this brings up issues of identity in general in our culture. I think people sort of, the idea of identity in the West is so deeply ingrained. People generally consider it something that's an essential part of human nature to have an identity or a collection of identities that are very fixed, static.
Modern Western psychology, at least, definitely believes that.
Although
due in large part to Freud, for good or for evil.
Okay, and but of course, there's very little reason to suspect that this is really how human beings work outside of Western culture. But Western culture does encourage people to think of themselves as a singular self, to the extent that if you ever feel like your self is fragmented or that you're sharing your brain space with more than one self, that's considered, you know, evidence that you have a mental illness.
Yes.
Although again, there are a lot of cultural things about that belief and understanding that have nothing to do with science or good empirical research. But all of that aside, again, I think people in the West, people in the United States especially, are encouraged to think of themselves as a singular whole self, and to construct the identity of, well, to construct an identity of that self to begin with. I don't want to assume here, because I don't assume this, that there is such a thing as the singular coherent self in an individual. That's a cultural construct in our culture, and so we follow that along as we're growing up. This is what we're taught to do, and so we build this artifice that is our singular cohesive self, and the building blocks of it are these things that our culture teaches us are identifiers, like our size or our color or our sex, or more specifically our gender. And so then we start to believe certain things about ourselves as if they are inborn, Like, this is, we were born with this. But really, we weren't. We have constructed this following cues from our culture, and now we have this monolithic vision of ourselves, and we feel threatened whenever anything comes along to challenge it or to suggest that maybe we can't continue to be that self. Like you were just saying, if you lose weight and you become a thinner person and suddenly you're not a fat person anymore, which is one of those things that you can be identified as in our culture, that's a, that can be a significant change. But I think that, and I completely understand what you're saying, but I think that part of what's happening there has to do with the way our culture insists that people construct these particular kinds of selves. And I don't think you're going to find that in every culture.
Somewhat, but also any state or condition that you've had for 30 years when you're only 36.
Well,
when it goes away.
I suppose, but...
But that depends on how the rate at which it goes away. But, if this is gradual then, enough, it may never be.
But even then, think about what you just said. A state that you've existed in for 30-some years.
A state or a condition, yes.
Yeah. There are a lot of cultures where there is no state that you're going to be in for 30-some years, because the way that you live your life, the way your material existence is arranged or constructed, makes change happen so often. There's no such thing as, well, I've been like this or I've done this thing for 30 years. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In our culture, we have the luxury of falling into an identity or a niche of an identity for years and years and years. And so, yeah, naturally, it is difficult to change. But in other cultures that are constructed on very different building blocks, that just is never going to happen. You're not going to have something that doesn't change for 30 years. And those people aren't as worried about change or as afraid of change as we are, because that's their life, change. Everything changes. Whereas in our culture, our culture tends to encourage people to settle into ruts and to find a place where they can make as little change as possible. And so in our culture, people tend to not like really any kind of change. I mean, they say they like positive change. I mean, just about everybody says they want to win the lottery, and that's a huge change, but nobody's allergic to that. At the same time, most people who win the lottery and they actually go through that significant change have a very difficult time with it. So yeah, I think our culture kind of, it's one of the mistakes and dysfunctions of our culture that it insists that people have these monolithic identities, and that leads to, you know, difficulty changing and struggles like what you're talking about. I think that's very interesting, though. It never occurred to me that you would feel that way about. I mean, both of my parents have always been big people. My mom's deceased, of course, but she was an overweight person the whole time I was growing up. And I remember kids staring at her and saying things about her to their moms. Oh, mom, look at that fat person, you know, and how bad it made my mom feel. So I've always felt kind of, you know, I'm a thin person. I have always been a thin person.
Yeah, you're downright scrawny.
But I've always, I've always kind of been upset with people making a big issue out of weight because of how my mom was treated. And, but in all the years I knew her, it never occurred to me that she might actually, you know, that her being overweight might be part of her identity. I never even considered that before until just now. And so what do you think it'll be like? I mean, do you think it'll be...
I don't know, because I've never experienced it.
Well, I mean, you're saying it'll be weird.
A lot of people are fat nowadays in this country. Tons of them.
Yeah, it's a kind of
an epidemic. A lot of people weren't when they were kids, or at least weren't as fat. And then they get older and they are. I have always been, I mean, I think I'm fatter now than I was as a kid, but it's always been a thing. I was always the fat kid. So I don't know what that's like to not be that. I'm also at a point in my life where it doesn't come up. I mean, people don't comment on it, you know, stuff like that. People at work comment a lot about how they think I'm slimming down now and I'm looking better and all this stuff. Which is really nice, and at the same time, weird because it sort of nudges it into outline.
Yeah.
Like when I was just fat, they didn't say anything. But now that that's changing, they're talking a lot. Yeah, so I'm like, right, well, clearly this was something.
well, not necessarily. Not necessarily. I mean,
no, and not necessarily. But, and a large part of what they say is you look in less pain when you're walking down the hall. You seem to have more energy. You seem happier. And that's all true. And that's wonderful. And that's what it's come down to. The whole thing I'm doing now is not about losing weight. It's not about getting thin. It's about staving off death
for as long
as I can.
Right, right.
And one of the side effects of that is having more energy and being happier and all that stuff. But I'm not setting out to become thin.
No, right.
That's the least of my concerns.
But
I don't know, though.
If it happens, I mean, do you think you'll have to adjust to it, or do you think...
What I think actually will happen is I never will. What I think will happen is I will always think of myself as a fat person, even if I'm not.
I would guess that, too.
I think I will, on some level, always imagine that I am. And it could be really bad if I attempt to relate to somebody who is fat if I'm not anymore. And express, like, empathy in a way that implies I feel we're in this together, and they're like, dude, what the fuck? So I'll have to watch out for that. I don't know. But it may not be a thing. I mean, you know, there's genetics involved, there's aging involved. I may get a lot better off. I may still always be sort of a fat dude. Like, I'm never going to have the washboard abs.
Yeah.
I'm just not built for it. I'm always going to have the pot belly. Based on my genetics, I will probably always have a pot belly. But I may end up pretty damn muscular. And when I look at my relatives, especially going on my maternal side, tendency to be broad-chested, have a lot of big muscles around here and stuff. So I might be kind of buff-looking. I don't know. One thing's for sure, I will be sexy as hell.
Why are so many people proud of their weaknesses? Yeah, you know, I'd have to agree that if you ever hear anybody sort of brag about something they're weak, I think you're right. I think there might be a little bit of a defense mechanism, or a little bit of, what else are they going to do? Like, as I said, if they don't think they can overcome it, or if they don't have any inclination to overcome it, because maybe they don't think it hurts anything or doesn't hurt anybody. So why go to the trouble? Why go to the work? What else are they going to do? Everyone else is going to notice they have this weakness and probably whisper behind their back about it. So they might as well say, look, everybody, I know this is a problem I've got. Here it is.
And sometimes it's dealing with pain. Sometimes dealing with tragedy. Yeah. And sometimes
maybe it is.
You don't brag about it till later. Nowadays, it could be argued I brag about my tonsillectomy. The story with all the blood and how I almost died.
Yeah.
That was not a thing to brag about at the time.
Yeah, right.
I brag about it now, because it makes a hell of a story. Have I told that story on the air?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I believe you have.
Sorry if anybody was eating during that podcast.
It was a pretty gruesome story.
It really is. But, yeah, I mean, things like that. Because it makes it easier to deal with.
So, yeah, maybe an interesting question like I said, what else can you do if you have a weakness that...
Well, and are they really proud, per se?
And you're kind of getting at that, too, a little bit. And what you're saying is, if it's a coping mechanism, it's like, well, you know, like you said, they're not really proud, but they have to cope with it. They have to deal with it. They have to...
Take pride in it.
Or do something, because if you just sort of deny it or whatever, it's still going to be there. Everyone else is going to know about it, and you're just going to be acting like it's not there, and that's ridiculous. So, and I suppose I guess as I'm thinking about it, I realize that really there are only two things you can do with a weakness. Either you can sort of, you know, talk about it frankly with people, like, this is who I am and what I'm about, which I suppose could be look like you're proud of it, or you could do something about it. And that's about, well... There are other things you could do. As I said, you could deny it even exists, but that's not going to impress anybody, so...
Are you proud of the fact that, and I just noticed this for the first time, you have one old person thumb and one young person thumb?
I don't know. I didn't even know.
Because that's really weird.
One of my hands is having a real hard time this winter with cracking and bleeding and stuff, and the other one isn't.
Maybe that's what it is. Because one hand is like, yeah, like an old person hand, and the other hand looks like a baby hand. It's like, you know, like people love to do those like inspirational videos or like those pictures that's like the old wizened like woman's hand and the little baby hand.
I have
you
both.
Could do that yourself.
Just with me.
You can just take a picture of your hands and it'll do.
I don't, do you?
It's the size too, people. One hand is actually the size of a little baby hand.
Do you have an, do you observe that there's something, some weakness of mine that I seem to be, I don't know, proud of or talk about like it's a, wear it as a badge of pride or something?
I don't know. I was anticipating you asking me that, and I was wondering. I don't. I don't know. I always feel like you have a lot of issues that you identify and you attempt to work on. I always feel like I think the biggest issues you have are probably ones that you either don't recognize or are in denial about. But I don't know what they are. I don't recognize them either. You seem to be very self-aware of your strengths and weaknesses, and you seem to suffer a great deal. And those two, to me, are incongruous.
Well, we've talked about before how I tend to not like myself very much. This has been a difficult thing for me to express in words. I used to say that I hated myself. I've come to realize that people who hate themselves are not me. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I now understand what it means to really hate yourself, and I've never felt that way about myself, so yeah. I don't hate myself. I'm not even so sure I can say I don't like myself, because now I understand what other people mean when they say that, and I don't feel that way about myself either. The best way I can describe it that seems to tie in with what other people say about themselves is I'm not satisfied with my life, but to an extent that it kind of bothers me on a daily basis kind of thing. So for me, and why am I not? Well, it's not just because I haven't accomplished certain things I want to accomplish. It's the reason I think is behind the fact that I haven't accomplished these things, which are personal weaknesses of mine that I don't like about me. So it's more like, if you live with somebody, you know, like you've got a roommate and they just have all of these habits that are exact wrong habits for you. You know, you just can't live with a person like this because they're going to drive you insane. That's like what it's like for me to live with me.
But here's the thing, because I've run into this with other people. Do you, these things you don't like, these weaknesses you have, do you work on them?
Well, I think I do. I mean, what I'm saying? When they come to my notice, it is my intention, once I'm aware of them, to say, all right, well, I've got to correct this and stop being this way. Or failing that, if for some reason I can't figure out how to do that, I have to take something that's a strength and leverage it against that. Like, for example, my forgetfulness, I've pretty much given up on not being forgetful. Because I don't, for whatever reason, I can't seem to overcome that weakness. But I'm pretty good at organizing things. Mm-hmm. So, for example, remembering which podcast number this is, I'm not very good at remembering the number of the podcast, but I'm really good at remembering to check
the number before
I come over. That's an organizational thing. That's not a memory thing. So I'm really good at that. So I leverage that to my advantage, and that neutralizes my forgetfulness in regard to that specific thing. So you know, that's my general approach to these things. The problem is that, you know, in terms of being self-aware, everyone has blind spots, you know, and everybody has things that they repress without realizing they're repressing them. So there's a lot of things going on that no matter how self-aware I try to be, I'm going to miss.
Yes.
And so there are some things that, that, you know, as I'm looking at it, I'm trying to figure out what is my mistake here, what is my particular weakness. It could be this thing, or it could be this thing. Or maybe it's this thing and I just don't want to admit it's that thing.
Yeah.
Or maybe I want to say it's this thing because that feels better to me or it justifies what I'm doing. And I don't have any way to decide because it's about me, you know. Yeah. It's self-referential and everything. So I've narrowed down my problem and my issue and what needs to be fixed down to a point where the issues that I'm dealing with are undecidable by me. And so I have to wonder, do I have this problem or do I have this problem? And is my tendency to think I have problem X because I don't want to admit I have problem Y?
Yeah, yeah.
And that drives me insane, and I hate that about me.
I run into this, and it frustrates me. I run into this with a lot of people, and it possibly is with me too, because that's the thing. Even people who are fairly self-aware aren't completely self-aware.
No,
and self-awareness is hard to get around. You can try and become more aware of yourself, but if you aren't aware of what's really going on, obviously you can't necessarily fix it.
Well, that's right.
But I run into a lot of people who say, for example, I have a short temper. It is a problem with me. I do not like it. I do not like that about myself. I wish I did not. And in my mind, if you are aware of that and you truly want it, you do not want it, I'm not saying you can make it go away. But if you really want it to go away and you work at it, it will get better. Over years, maybe it requires drugs in that instance. Yeah, maybe it requires counseling. Maybe the progress is very slow, but it won't be static. And no, I feel like there are too many people who say, I hate that I have a short temper. What are you going to do?
Right. Well,
and I'm like, well, fuck that.
I do think that the concept of leveraging your strengths against your weaknesses is a fairly widely misunderstood concept, because if you don't have that tool or that understanding, if you can't understand the concept, well, look, I have these strengths, maybe I can use them to neutralize my weaknesses, then some weaknesses are going to seem insurmountable and hopeless. Although I suspect that some people who say this is true about myself and I don't like it, you're kind of suggesting that maybe they don't dislike it enough to do anything about it, and I think that might be true.
It's one thing to say I always struggle with this, and maybe you always will.
Yeah.
But I mean, this used to be a thing in my father, and thank goodness it improved eventually. He's the really good example because he's a short temper. He would always apologize for flying off the handle, and that was nice. But I never saw any evidence that he was really doing anything to try and make that happen less.
Yeah, right.
And I knew he knew about it, and I knew he didn't want to do it, but to him it was just sort of a fact of life.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing that's been concerning me recently, and I think maybe this comes into play for a lot of people. Maybe it even came into play with your father. Sometimes when things go wrong in my life, and I sit down and try to figure out what I did, what I screwed up, or what, you know, what part did I play in this going wrong, I'll either find something that I did or didn't do, or I'll realize there's a possibility there's something I did or didn't do that I'm not entirely aware of, but that by doing the thing or not doing the thing, it contributed largely to this thing going wrong.
Uh-huh.
And so regardless of whether I find a specific thing or not, or if I just suspect there's a thing that I don't know, it's the same either way, because it all comes down to why didn't I do that thing? Or conversely, why did I do that thing? Because if I really wanted this important thing to happen, an important thing like getting into graduate school is a good example. I always dreamed of going to graduate school. I didn't get in. There were a lot of reasons that had nothing to do with me and that were beyond my control. But there were some things I could have done differently, such as I could have easily gotten a better GPA in college. I've talked about this before, I'm sure, where when I got to college, I thought, you know what, I'm paying for this. If I don't feel like going to a class, I won't. And I knew and I knew I could get a C without showing up, and I did. And it didn't bother me that I had a straight three-point GPA when I finished college, because who cares? And I thought I was going to go to graduate school in sociology because I was working with Carl Couch here at the University of Iowa. He seemed to like me, and everything seemed to be going well, and it didn't seem to matter what my GPA turned out to be, especially since my GPA for sociology, was like an A+. Yeah. It was just through the roof great. But it turned out that he wasn't taking graduates. Again, that had nothing to do with me, that he wasn't taking graduate students. But I couldn't adjust and just go someplace else and apply, because
and
now
suddenly
my
have a better GPA.
Yeah, because now my GPA was not awful, but it wasn't as good as a lot of my competition. And so, you know, one thing led to another, and I didn't get into graduate school. And so I had to ask myself, why did I do that? I mean, you know, I'm paying for this, and I can blow it off if I feel like it. But I wasn't so stupid to think that a transcript doesn't matter at all, and I could get a better GPA. So why not just do it? And, you know, I have to wonder if, you know, I was just being lazy, or sometimes and this is the point I was getting at when I started this, that perhaps I was leaning on some privilege, you know, because all my life I've been a white male, and when I was growing up, everything came easy to me in my little town. And I didn't think that things came easy to just me. I thought they came easy to everybody.
Well, and this might be, you might suffer, this is a similar thing I did. I had incredibly supportive parents. And that did for some great things.
Well,
and I'm very grateful for that.
That's right. I had very supportive parents too.
One of the fallouts of that is I just kind of assumed I could pretty much do anything ever wanted to without a lot of effort.
Right, right. Well, but the reason I talk about privilege is because, yes, part of that was because I had supportive parents.
Also,
that's true.
An incredibly supportive society as a white male in America.
Exactly.
Yes,
because
I'm
pretty certain there are other people who came from the town I came from who also had very supportive parents who didn't have the assumptions I had, mostly because they were women. And in spite of all the support they had from their parents and the rest of the teachers and everything else, they still understood that women had a hard time. And so I was leaning on a little bit of privilege there going through college, thinking, you know, I was just so used to everything being handed to me as a white male. And, you know, so even now, things have happened in my life where some long-term goals, long-term projects that I really felt passionate about and I really felt like I was giving 100% to turned out exactly the opposite of what I wanted. And I have to wonder, did it happen again? Was there some key moment where I needed to do something and I just told myself, nah, I can skip that today, just because I felt that day like it wasn't important, because I'm just so used to things still to this day, so used to things being easy. And that was just the day where I shouldn't have done that. And it messed everything up. Now, of course, that's irrational. I mean, that, you know, nothing comes down to just one day, one moment. But maybe it's a collection of moments. Maybe. So the point being, you know,
you wish you were black is what
No, it means that the particular problems it seems like I have seem tailor-made to impact me in really dramatic ways that hurt me and other people very deeply, but that I'm not aware of until after the fact. And so I'm always trying to catch up with, you know, this weakness that is causing so many problems in my life. Just when I think I've figured it out, something bad happens and I realize, oh, I didn't have it figured out. And of course, I still don't have it figured out, because it's a huge, whatever it is, it's a huge blind spot, I guess. And, you know, it makes me very frustrated with myself. And like I say, it makes me very unsatisfied and not like myself very much. But it's hard to put a finger on what that specific weakness really is. And I'm certainly not proud of it. I wish it.
You know, the constant problem I have with this question, I keep hearing you saying, we're not proud of our fires. Ladies and gentlemen, my boss once led a team of tech support techs in which we spent a year where the theme for our team, the motto for our team, our technical support team dealing with insurance automation software, just so you're clear, was, quote, "We're not proud of our fires," end quote. Now, before William goes on to explain, as I'm sure he will, I just want you to let that sink in for a minute and just bask in the what the fuckedness of that. Because, really, that was our motto. We're not proud of our fires.
Well, the thing is,
conceptually, it was a really good idea. You marketed it poorly.
I did?
Well, because that's a stupid motto for a tech support team.
Oh, okay.
But the idea behind it was very good. Do you want to explain that idea?
Well, there's not, a whole lot to explain. That it really came from a video that was circulating that, you know, managers and leaders of all types were using and showing to their teams where a fire department, I don't even remember where it was, but one of the guiding principles of this fire department was to sort of remind themselves that they're not proud of when a fire breaks out in their town and they go fight it, they're glad that they fought it and they hope they reduced loss of life and property, but they're not proud of that. What they're proud of is preventing fires.
That's the days when there are no fires.
Yeah, because a lot of the work that they did was educating the community, inspecting, smoke alarms and stuff, doing things that would prevent fires or at the very least minimize damage and save lives, and that's what they wanted to chalk up as their victories. They didn't want to measure their success by how many fires they successfully put out. And of course, it was impossible for them to measure their success by how many fires didn't start because they're the count. But certainly, if a year passes and there are fewer fires and they know they're out in the community trying to make sure that happens, they can claim some success for that. So I thought that was a good model for us as well as a support team, because our particular support team, on the surface, that might seem odd, because what does support do except put out fires? You just wait for someone to call with a problem, you help them with it, and it's done. But our support team also did quite a bit to report problems to developers, and we almost
prevention work.
Yeah, we did a lot of prevention work, and we almost had a testing role a little bit. So there were a lot of things we could do to actually prevent calls from coming in, to actually prevent problems. And I thought it was a good idea for our support team to focus on that kind of activity, like knowledge base entries. That's another thing. It might not prevent a problem, but it would prevent someone from calling in or thinking that there was a problem when there wasn't one. So to encourage people to dedicate more of their time, not just to taking calls and helping people with their fires, encouraging people also to do preventative type things and take pride in the calls that we prevented, I used that as sort of a motivational thing for a while.
As a model, it was wonderful. As a motto, it made it sound like we were grudgingly admitting that within our ranks, we had a few pyromaniacs, and we did feel bad about that, if we were
okay,
honest.
Okay, well, you're taking the motto out of context, though.
No, but that's the thing, is we're not proud of our fires. The first two things that come to mind is your support techs, what fires... And, of course, you're not proud of fires. Who the hell is proud of fire except maybe Prometheus? And even then, the liver eating and stuff, he might still not be too proud.
Well, anyway.
So it sounds weird. The model behind it, admirable.
Well, actually, after,
I like the model.
After a while, I created a model. I expanded on it to create a whole model for the software development process and the role of each group in it, including support. And I developed an instructional module for that, and I was teaching that over at our home office. And in one of my classes, our CEO was sitting in on it and saw my presentation.
Yeah, our CEO was a tool.
Well, be that as it may, it worked, and it got a lot of mileage.
And the following year, I believe, the motto you came up with was world-class support.
No, I don't think
so. Wasn't that one? Something like that.
I don't remember that. Maybe I did. I don't remember.
Yeah, or first class or something like that.
I don't know.
Much better motto.
Okay, well,
apparently a forgettable model in this case, but much better motto.
Well, the whole fire station fireman analogy thing lasted for several years, if you recall.
It did, because we had all the awards, yeah, and I got awards. I still have the hat. The hat is in this house.
Oh, somewhere. It is. The little
fire chief hat. Is in this house. So, I love that hat.
So, yeah.
You made me take the batteries out of it, though.
I did?
Yes, you did.
Were you making noises with it?
Possibly.
Oh.
I might have been making
noises. Oh, well, yeah.
I might have even back then been known as the troublemaker in the workplace.
Well, anyway, because the
fair, that was a whole team of troublemakers.
The helmet had a button on it. On the front, you pushed it, and it lit up, and it made a siren noise.
Yes.
But anyway.
It was a wonderful hat.
Why are so many? Well, I think we've probably
beaten it into the ground.
Yeah, I think we've been very thorough with this question and personal.
And we're pretty much out of time now. So.
Wow, just one, huh?
Yes. It was some powerful stuff. And from Hard Hat number one, so he gets like his own show here.
Good job, Mark. Thanks for that question. What should people do if they have questions and comments for that?
Talk to your parents, a teacher, maybe a pastor, someone you trust, and show them on the doll. Wait, no, sorry.
Oh, God. I can't believe you just did that.
I know. Dude, feel bad.
You should. You really should feel bad.
You should write the hat, because the hat is hungry. Always. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Once again, that is TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Write the hat with a topic, a question, something. Make it not big, because then it won't fit on a card, and it'll be made smaller, and then we'll read it and be confused.
What if people want to brag about their weaknesses? What should they do then?
If you want to brag about your weaknesses, you can email Mark directly at... No. You can go to the blog to brag about your weaknesses, like most people do. TheMagicalTalkingHat.com. Once again, that is TheMagicalTalkingHat.com. Tell us your weakness and how proud you are. Or, better yet, tell us more of William's weaknesses. You can just make them up. I don't even care. I get a kick out of it. So
yeah.
Do that. And then tune in next week when somebody who's not us.
Well, hopefully not us, because.
Oh, dude, no. I ain't doing this 2 weeks in a row.
That'd be a real problem.
It takes so much out of me to do one episode. I need at least a month to recuperate.
At least. If we can get it, sure.
Yes.
Yeah, I understand.
So those guys will talk to you next week and enjoy. We're not proud of our earthquakes.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.